Blog Talk Radio.
Con los terroristas. Con los terroristas.
Alright, Sportsaholics 24/7, brand new episode today. I'm your host, John, joined by my co-hosts, Jordan and Nick. Brenton couldn't make it today. What's going on, guys?
Hey, John, what's going on?
Much.
All right. We have a full slate of things to talk about today. We're going to start off with the trouble surrounding the New York Jets. We're going to talk about Geno Smith, what they should do about that. Then we're going to move on to the MLB playoffs, which are now starting up after the two wild card games have concluded. We're going to wrap up the episode with a controversy at the University of Michigan involving quarterback Shane Morris having a concussion and still being put into the game. We're going to talk about all that. But, guys, let's start off with something that affects you two both a lot, the New York Jets. They lost again this weekend. They're not looking that great. They have a tough schedule coming up. Jordan, we'll start with you. What adjustments do the Jets need to make to get back in the swing of things?
Well, you say adjustments, and I don't really know if it's necessarily adjustments. It's right now, I mean, when they came into the season, I think there were not high expectations, but definitely higher than the past. Last year, going into the season, they were ranked 32nd in ESPN's power rankings, which obviously Rex Ryan made a big deal of. This year, expectations were a little bit higher. But when it comes down to it, it doesn't matter how talented a team is. The Jets just don't make smart decisions when they're on the field. I know I said this last time on the show, and it just carried over the past 2 weeks. Whenever something good seems to happen, something bad happens. And it really starts with Geno Smith. I think he's made strides to an extent this year. I think he looks a little bit more confident throwing the ball than he did last year. But very small improvements. Last year he was just completely horrible. But the Jets surround him with a better running game, got a few receivers, and Geno Smith has really just not taken advantage of what the Jets have given him. No matter how talented he is, no matter how much improvement he's made, the reality is he's throwing interceptions, he's fumbling the ball, he's taking bad sacks, he's not being smart, especially in the red zone where the Jets just can't convert in the red zone. And if you can't convert in the red zone, you're not going to win football games when you're playing against other good offenses. And in terms of the upcoming schedule, of course, we got San Diego this week, followed by Denver, which are two extremely tough games. But then it gets a little easier. I think the AFC East is a pretty weak division this year, especially with New England not playing their best football. So even if they do end up losing these next two games, I'm not going to say the season's over. Just because their schedule gets immensely easier after these next 2 weeks. But right now, it's really not looking good. What do you think, Nick?
Well, first of all, you're right. Geno Smith is probably the worst decision maker as a quarterback in the NFL. In the fourth quarter, a few minutes left in the game, the Jets need that first down, third and two. Eric Decker's wide open. Eric Decker makes a perfect cut. He's wide open down the field. What does he do? He throws a screen pass to Chris Ivory, who is, first of all, would not have gotten the first down even if he did catch the ball, who is a ground-and-pound runner, not a reception kind of running back, and he dropped the pass before that. What is he thinking, not throwing to his number one receiver, when instead throwing to a ground-and-pound running back who wouldn't have gotten the first down, and that first down was so important? You have to be smarter. You can't do that. And Marty Mordenweg is a horrible coordinator. He's terrible. And I'm almost convinced that the decision to start Geno Smith isn't almost, like, I'm almost thinking John Idzik is telling him, you know, when to put in Geno Smith, and Rex Ryan just kind of being the yes man, because he's so defensive-minded, and he doesn't even worry about the offense as much. And I'm just worried, because I don't understand the argument to start Geno Smith over Michael Vick. There's no way Michael Vick would have made those same stupid mistakes Geno Smith was making. And this year, if there's going to be any year to win the AFC East, this is the year. This is the year the Patriots are finally starting to crumble. This is the year Tom Brady isn't looking like himself. They have to make changes. And they can't go into the next game thinking with the same – they can't play the Chargers on Sunday with the same strategy, the same mentality with Geno Smith, playing the same offensive game. I definitely
agree with you with Geno and his very poor decision-making. There was another time in the game, I think it was the first quarter, maybe it was the second, where it was third down and 10, and Geno was on the right side of the field. He had a wide-open first down where he could have ran, probably couldn't have ran for about 20, 25 yards. And what does he do? He decides to throw it across his body to the other side of the field, made the completion, but the play had no chance of being a first down. It's just those little decisions that can really hurt the Jets.
I think
the sense of urgency that you're talking about with Michael Vick, I have mixed feelings about it. I think on one hand, I want to continue to develop Geno, but at the same time, this year is such a great opportunity because the AFC is much weaker than the NFC. The AFC East in particular, the Bills aren't going anywhere. I'm not sold on the Dolphins. I mean, the Patriots are going to be tough to beat, but they're 2-2 right now, and they just don't look like the football team they've been in the past. So if you're looking at the situation for the Jets, if you have an opportunity to put in arguably the best, maybe one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league, who you're paying $5 million a year, I don't see why you don't pull the plug on Geno and get that spark from Michael Vick, and hopefully he can take you farther. And the other thing I want to note is, last year, EJ Manuel was the number one pick in the draft, first round pick in the draft. And you see this year, the Bills are 2-2, which is a game better than the Jets. EJ Manuel has arguably played better than Geno Smith. And they decided this week to bench him for Kyle Orton, who I don't even think he's on the same level as Michael Vick. So yeah. I don't think it would be unprecedented to leave Michael Vick on the bench and continue to go with Geno.
And not only that, but they paid him money for a reason. They didn't pay him money to sit on the bench and look pretty. That's not his job. His job was to be a safety net in the case that Geno Smith starts to suck, which obviously happened. You have to win games. You can't look at, well, let him develop, let this happen, let that happen. Tick tock, tick tock. The Jets are 1-3. They lost 3 games in a row, the 16 games in an NFL season, and if they're going to win the AFC East at any time within the next 10 years, this is the time.
Here's my take in the Jets. I look at the Jets, and in general, I think that front offices and football teams and coaching staffs, there are two strategies that they have. One is a win-now mentality where you go out, spend all this money, bring in the best players, and you try to win the Super Bowl this year. Another is kind of a more rebuilding approach. I don't even think that the Jets are rebuilding. I think the Jets are just building. And I think that the Jets are doing it the wrong way. I think that they're throwing Geno Smith into the fire right now. Yeah, he's playing a little bit better than last year, but he has not shown much improvement. And especially when you have a young quarterback that's playing like he is, which is not that great, and he's getting a lot of crap from the fans, this can kill his confidence in himself, and this can ruin his career. Just look at Mark Sanchez, what happened. He made a few bad mistakes, and we're seeing a lot. There's some parallels between Sanchez and Geno, just the bad decision-making.
Mark Sanchez is not that bad.
I feel like the reason why the Jets have had trouble developing these quarterbacks is because they rely too much on young quarterbacks that they draft, and they just throw them right into the fire. I personally believe that Michael Vick should start for the next game for the Jets, for the next few games. You know, they're sitting there at 1-3 right now in a relatively weak AFC East. So why not give it a shot? Why not see what Vic can do? Maybe he could win you a few games. And you know what can happen? Geno Smith can sit in the sideline, watch, he can learn, he can take his time and really develop through practice and not be forced to be forced into these pressure situations where it really, really matters. I think Michael Vick is more experienced, and I think Michael Vick can do a better job with this Jets team. He's still a very good athlete.
Going back to what you said before, I have two things to add to that. One, after being a Jets fan for so many years in my life, I mean, there's two reoccurring themes that just happen over and over again. One is disappointment. Whenever they seem to have something going, they end up disappointing you as a fan. And the second thing is turmoil in the front office. I mean, it seems year after year, they get this label of a circus, and they're in the media, and now we see this week that some of the front office doesn't like what Idzik is doing. And we see this week with Geno Smith, and, you know, giving the middle finger to one of the fans after the game and saying F you to him or whatever he did. It just shows how it's not a very, it's not like run like a professional organization. And the second thing is, with Nick talking about Mark Sanchez, honestly, right now, I'd rather have Mark Sanchez starting.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I mean, I never thought I would say that after the 2 years that Sanchez had, the last 2 years he was on the Jets. But right now, I'd rather have him than Geno.
Yeah, and here's another thing. It's not just Geno, though. Marty Mornhinweg, from what I see, I think he is a terrible offensive coordinator. They are too repetitive with their plays. For example, they have Chris Ivory, Chris Johnson, and Bilal Powell. They're only using Chris Ivory with basically one type of play. The same type of play every time they run the ball. Last time, Chris Johnson got, he played a few snaps. Bilal Powell did not play one snap that entire game. And the problem with you're doing is, okay, what are you
going to
say?
I don't understand your obsession with Bilal Powell. He's not
that
great.
He needs to play! He needs to play!
I'd rather have Chris Ivory in there and Chris Johnson. Bilal Powell is nothing special.
Yeah, Chris Ivory is becoming, you know, an above-average starting running back.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Look at the very first drive of the game. I think they handed it to him about maybe 10 times in a row. And what do you do? He picks up 5-6 yards, yards after hit, just dragging men with him, you know, trucking guys over. He's becoming a great running back. Why would you mess that up with Bilal Powell?
Can I finish my point?
Go ahead.
Bilal Powell and Chris Ivory are very different types of running backs. And the Jets, I mean, Chris Ivory is a simple ground-and-pound power kind of runner. Chris Johnson, he plays all this. He can do ground and pound. He can run around the defense, start a foot race. Bilal Powell, he's great. He's quick. He can maneuver through the defenses. He can go out from any screen passes and everything. And when you use all three different types, that keeps the defense off balance. And here's another thing. That last game, the Jets were trying to use Chris Ivory with screen passes. He is like a fish out of water with screen passes. He does not have good hands. What the Jets have to understand is that he's not Jamal Charles. He's Chris Ivory, a simple ground-and-pound runner. He's not a reception kind of running back. And if you're going to throw passes, you're going to throw screen passes, put in either Chris Johnson or Bilal Powell, because that's the type of runners they are. Chris Johnson does not have good hands. And he's not the type of runner who runs around the defense. He runs through the defense.
Nick, a key part in football is getting into a rhythm, whether you're a quarterback, you're an offensive lineman, a safety, a kicker, and even a running back, you have to be able to get into a rhythm. And you're suggesting that the Jets use three running backs. You look at any good team, any good football team at any level, whether it's college, high school, professional, at most they have two running backs that get the snaps. You don't see many teams with three running backs getting a good amount of plays because the starting running back and the backup running back need to get into a rhythm. Those are the two best running backs in the team. Bilal Powell is not in the top two on the Jets roster.
Powell can be very good. He just hasn't gotten a chance. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have a rhythm, But rhythm does not necessarily mean it has to be repetitive. There's a difference.
I know that. But repetitive doesn't mean not being repetitive does not mean that you have to bring another guy. It just means that you could mix up the plays. And I think that Chris Ivory and Chris Johnson are two very different running backs that bring different things to the table. Ivory being a power guy, Johnson being a speed guy. And that's something good for the Jets. That's something, you know, by having two guys in there, they could both get in their own rhythm and they could help
each
other out.
Yeah, but they're not even using Johnson.
By bringing in a third guy, that can mess things up. All right, now I think it's time to move on from the Jets to the MLB playoffs. Last night, we saw the San Francisco Giants go into Pittsburgh and beat the Pirates in the NL wildcard game, in the AL wildcard game a few nights ago. The Kansas City Royals, in a crazy game, defeated the Oakland A's. So here is the playoff bracket. The Tigers face off against the Orioles, first round in the ALDS, as well as the Royals versus the Angels. In the NLDS, it's the Cardinals against the Dodgers and the Giants versus the Nationals. Jordan, we'll start with you. Who's going to win it all?
Well, my personal opinion is the two most talented teams remaining right now are the two teams from Los Angeles. I think the Dodgers and the NL, with their top two with Kershaw and Greinke, that's just a tremendous top two starters. And their offense, they got guys like Puig and Adrian Gonzalez and Hanley Ramirez. I mean, they got a great overall team. I think they're the most talented team in the NL. I think the AL, I think it's the Angels that middle of the order with the best three guys in their lineup with Trout, Pujols, and Hamilton. And then there's Jared Weaver at the top of their rotation. I think they're the most talented team in the AL. They had the best record during the season. Now, does that mean that I think they're going to be the two teams that meet up in the World Series? No. I think I've seen a trend in the MLB around the past decade, actually. I just think it's going to be the Cardinals and the Giants in the NLDS, and I think the Tigers are going to be in the ALDS. I think the Cardinals and Giants have so much playoff experience. They know how to win in October. I mean, you saw it last night in Pittsburgh against an inexperienced Pirates team. I think those two teams will be in the NLDS. And the Tigers, who have been one of the best teams in baseball the past few years, they're with Verlander, Scherzer, and Price. I mean, honestly, it just comes down to pitching in October. If you have good starting pitchers, if you have one or two aces on your staff, you got a chance to go a long way. And that's why I think those three teams will be in the semifinal.
Nick, how about you?
Jordan, I agree with you on that. But my honest prediction, though, this year, I think the final World Series is going to be a crosstown game between the Angels and the Dodgers. I really do like the Tigers, though, because I think the Tigers are very talented and in a way underrated. Because what I love about them is their consistency in the heart of the lineup. Which is really what I love, and I'm always confident in them. But the problem with the Tigers is that I don't love their pitching. They don't have a good bullpen, and a team like the Angels has much better pitching than that. And pitching is really what dominates a lot of the time.
Yeah, I agree. The key to the playoffs in baseball is pitching. It's having a good rotation. It's having a good bullpen. You often see very low-scoring games, although last night the Giants were able to put up a lot of runs against the Pirates. So I look at all these teams right now in the playoffs, and they all have very, very, very good pitching staffs. So I actually think that the Kansas City Royals have a legitimate chance of getting to the World Series. I think that they just play with this confidence and they're going to go into the playoffs, especially against the one seed, with this underdog mentality. And the pressure's going to be on the Angels. You know, no one wants to lose to a team like the Kansas City Royals, who make the playoffs once in a blue moon. No one wants to lose to them. So I actually like the Kansas City Royals in the World Series. I think that they're going to face the Washington Nationals. The Nationals can hit the ball so well. They're a very talented team. I really like those two teams, the way they play baseball.
Well, I was going to say, John, before you brought up the Nationals, that no one mentioned them. With Strasburg, Jordan Zimmermann, and Gio Gonzalez at the top, that's just as good as anybody else out there.
It's Steph.
And the other team that's right next to them is the Baltimore Orioles, who I think they have a very talented team, but I don't think they have enough. Like, for example, their starting catcher, Matt Wieters, has been out for a while. Manny Machado, their star third baseman, he's out for the year. Chris Davis, mm-hmm. who was an MVP candidate last year, he's suspended now. I think out of complete roster, I think they could be a World Series contender, but I don't think they're going to get by Detroit. I just see Detroit as a better team than them right now.
Yeah, I feel like the Orioles were able to dominate a pretty weak AL East, so that's why they seem to be so good.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that because the Orioles, they have too many holes in their lineup. They're missing
exactly.
so much. Manny Machado was a star. I think the arguably the best leadoff hitter in the game right now. So proficient at third base. Great arm, can cover great range in the field. They're missing Chris Davis, one of the best power. All they have right now is Nelson Cruz, and that's great. He led the league in home runs. He had 40 home runs in the regular season. Average can definitely improve for a player at his level, but you're going to need more than that.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. I think Cruz really carries that offense, but Adam Jones was an all-star. I mean, they got some good guys, but I don't think enough to take down Detroit.
Yeah, Adam Jones is more of a gap hitter. He doesn't have as much power as a guy like Cruz.
Well, he was in the home run derby. I wouldn't say he doesn't have power.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying he doesn't have power, but I mean, compared to Cruz, he doesn't have as much power.
Well, I don't think anybody in the league right now has as much power as Cruz.
Giancarlo Stanton.
Home run.
Giancarlo Stanton.
In the AL. I think you can make the argument that Cruz is the best home run hitter in the AL, right?
You could, but I mean, Giancarlo Stanton, he didn't fall very far short, and he played in fewer games. So if he played in as many games as Cruz, he probably would hit more home runs.
Right.
All right. Now we're going to get back to the subject, but before we do, I just want to remind all of our listeners, if you guys want to call in about anything that we've already discussed, anything that you guys want to discuss, if you want to call in about the University of Michigan, which we're going to talk about in 2 minutes, the number to call in is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. Now, we're going to quickly talk a little bit more about the MLB playoffs before we move on to Michigan, but an interesting thing that people have been talking about recently was the strategy of Royals manager Ned Yost in the American League wildcard game. The Royals did end up winning the game, but he had some very questionable decision-making. He brought
Here's
in
one.
A guy that pitched almost 80 pitches.
Verdano Ventura.
Yep. He made some
terrible.
Very, very questionable calls. Do you guys think that this could his managerial decisions in the playoffs can cost them? Or do you think he'll be
absolutely.
A little bit more conservative?
Well,
first of all, he took out James Shields, who is their number one pitcher, way too early in the game. He had no stress on his arm. Some stress on his arm, but he seemed fine to me. He certainly seemed fine. He was certainly throwing the ball well. He didn't have to take him out yet. He could have kept him in. They still had the lead. But to bring in Yordano Ventura, who is a starting pitcher, by the way, who is wild when you have the lead, is a terrible decision. You can't do that. That is risking way too much. He can throw hard, but he's too wild. You can't do that in the playoffs.
All right, well, Nick, I will say this just to wrap up this discussion. I don't think any of us really watched Kansas City enough this year to be able to judge Ned Yost on his manager skills. I just think one move in the – I mean, I understand the stakes, but if this guy who he brought in is a pretty dominant pitcher when he has his control. If he came in there and struck out the side like he's supposed to do, then – none of us would be even having this discussion at all. I think the fact that he was able to take a Royals team who had no confidence at all entering the season, had him in the playoffs in 29 years, I wouldn't really be sitting here over one move questioning whether or not his managering is going to is going to ultimately doom the Royals in the playoffs. I think if they're going to fall to the Angels, it's going to be because the Angels are a better team.
Yeah.
I think
That's a great point, yeah.
I'm not saying he definitely will make those mistakes. I'm just saying if he does make mistakes like that, then that could hurt them. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, it's time to move on to our final topic of the day, the University of Michigan. The football team there has been struggling this season. They are currently sitting at 2-3, 0-1 in Big Ten play. They even lost to Utah. They got shut out by Notre Dame. They lost this weekend bad at home to Minnesota. They play at Rutgers this weekend, but we're not going to focus as much on the way they've been playing as we're going to focus on what's going on with Shane Moore, starting quarterback, and Coach Brady Hoke. Coach Hoke was already in the hot seat before the whole controversy started. In case you guys don't know what happened, starting quarterback Shane Morris took a pretty big hit near the end of the game this past weekend. He was clearly shaken up, came to the sideline. The medical staff actually cleared him to play. However, the team neurologist said that it was clear that Shane Morris had a concussion. That message was not relayed to head coach Brady Hoke and his coaching staff, and they sent Shane Morris back into the game despite the fact that he has a concussion. And now the athletic director released a statement saying that they apologize that he did have a concussion, and students at the university are outraged. They're calling for the resignation of the school's athletic director. Nick, we'll start with you. What does this all mean?
Well, it basically means, first of all, we really don't know what it means yet because we don't know all the details with Brady Hoke and what he knew and what he should have known and all that because, you know, he is getting scapegoated because he's not a part of the medical staff and he just goes by what the medical staff tells them. Now, if the medical staff, now supposedly the medical staff knew he had a concussion and somehow, I don't know how, it's really beyond me, but that message did not reach Brady Hoke. This is really bad. It's just really, really bad on the medical staff's part. Either that or, Brady Hoke knew about what happened and then just played him in anyway. I truthfully do not think that happened. But concussions are something that you cannot fool around with. In a way, you're basically fooling around with the guy's life there, his career. And, you know, one more hit to the head, he could be a vegetable for the rest of his life. And it's a serious issue that needs to be more awareness needs to be raised about.
Well, the way I look at it, I personally don't think I don't know enough about this situation to talk intelligently about it. However, I do agree. I think overall the situation is just very embarrassing and it's just a horrible thing because as we all know in this day and age in the NFL, in science, we understand as a society the dangers of concussions and what it's doing to the brains of these students and players during their career and especially after their career. If a guy's concussion, he does not belong on the football field. And you're right, Nick, it's truly, out of any real injury, I think it's the one where you really just can't fool around with, you can't mess around with it. And for this to happen, it's just a horrible mistake and it's just unacceptable, really.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people feel that Brady Hoke is being scapegoated because the message didn't get to him, but that is a horrible job by the medical staff if they can't get the message to the head coach because that's who it ultimately has to go to. And that is just, I think they should be fired for that because that is a terrible, terrible job. And it's completely unacceptable.
I really like how Jordan put it. He said it was embarrassing, and I like that because clearly Brady Hoke and the medical staff and every one of the Michigan coaching staff, they're not trying to hurt their players. They're trying to protect their players. And I know that Brady Hoke would never do anything to try to hurt his players. I just think it was bad miscommunication. It was a bad mistake. And it's just embarrassing for the university. I personally think that at the end of the season, unless Michigan makes a big-time turnaround this season, they're sitting at 2-3 right now near the bottom of the Big Ten. I don't think he's going to have his job after this season. I mean, the athletic director might be fired as well. It'll be interesting, though. All right, now thank you all for listening in. Jordan and Nick, thanks for being on the show today. We'll be back for the weekend. Enjoy the football games. Thanks for listening.
Have a good weekend.
Happy Yom Kippur.